Because when is this movie coming out? Or the, sorry, docu-series?
I don't know.
You know?
We're pitching it around now. But yeah, maybe it'll be quite a while. It seems that these things take forever and we have to finish the series too. So it turned into a series. So it'll be a while.
It's really exciting because, I mean, I just found you, I think, on Instagram. And people should definitely follow your Instagram, Food Lies. It's amazing. You post the coolest stuff. It's the most informative, but also it's like so interesting and funny. Great stuff on there. And so you've been doing research for this docuseries for like, what, 6 years?
Yeah, over 6 years now.
Yeah. So you must know a lot. I mean, people say I do my research, but 6 years is like, I mean, you must know everything about food at this point.
Well, there's always something new to learn, but I have come to some good conclusions over the years and learned a lot and kind of relearned things and zoomed out a bit and, you know, like thought that I knew a lot and then realized I don't. And then I learned more and then you keep zooming out until you can't really debunk yourself. So I think it's best to try to do that actually is try to debunk yourself.
Yeah, I like that. I heard you say that is what science is about, is that you think of a theory and then you try to disprove yourself. You try to debunk your own theory, not the other way around, which is what we're now science is turning into is like, hey, we think this and we're going to try to prove it and prove you wrong and spend a bunch of money to prove that we're right.
Exactly. Yeah, that's how science is done. The nutrition science, a lot of stuff is done that way. Also, that's how the vegetarian stuff goes. So people might have seen the Blue Zones. There's a new documentary on Netflix or a little docu-series. And it's exactly what happened is a guy named Dan Buettner for, I don't know, 20 years now, more, has been just trying to prove that we should be vegetarian without any actual science. He's just kind of going around because this was his preconceived notion that we should be vegetarian just based on his personal beliefs. And then went around and tried to reverse engineer that. And so I actually, a lot of good people debunking him though. It's great.
Well, yeah. And you have that film on your YouTube channel that people can watch for free, Game Changers Debunked. There's two versions, one just the regular and then one with deleted scenes. I watched the deleted scenes. I thought the deleted scenes were hilarious, personally.
We tried to have fun with it. It was Dr. Sean Baker's idea. He's hilarious, you know, big meat-eating guy, and he just wanted to do some skits.
Yeah. So explain, I know you've told the story a million times, but just the whole background, you know, you started mechanical engineering and then you turned 30 and some things happened to your parents. Can you explain that whole thing to my audience, why you got interested in this topic?
Yeah. 30. I lost both my parents at 30 and it was kind of a wake up call. And it was actually really at the same time that I started getting the dad bod and kind of going downhill with my health. A lot of times that happens at 30. And really what happens at 30 is a lot of people just can't get away with the modern diet and lifestyle. So that's really what happens is that you kind of get away with it while you're young and then it catches up to you. And so you have to make some changes. And I just started eating properly and my whole life changed. It was so easy. Like I just stopped eating like bread and pasta and seed oils and stuff. And it just happened naturally. And I just went to a more natural human diet, which, you know, we can explore later. But I had chronic conditions myself. I had all these overuse injuries and inflammation in my arms and wrists and body from using the computer. I had acid reflux. I had joint pain. I had really just extra 25 pounds of fat all around my body. And then I lost all that when I just made a few simple changes to my diet. And I thought, well, I just need to tell the world about this. So I quit my job and just started doing this full time.
That's amazing. Yeah. The before and after pictures are pretty spectacular. So is the before and after, is that strictly from diet or did you change a workout thing too?
Well, I work out less now. So yeah, I used to, I'm not a big fan of jogging. I think if any exercise people do is good, but I was just trying to outrun my bad diet back in the day. And I just think this steady state cardio, you people sitting on a treadmill for 45 minutes isn't really helping anyone. And you need to change your diet first, and that's most important. And then also I just changed instead of doing that, I started sprinting for very short times instead, or lifting weights. I do this quick and efficient workout that's only 30 minutes twice a week. So I've never spent more than an hour in the gym in a week ever. Like,
what the hell? I'm working out 6 or 7 days a week, and I don't look like you. Like, maybe I need to switch to your workout.
I do teach it. Yeah. It's a whole thing. I learned through all my interviews in the last 6 years. I interviewed muscle protein researchers, you know, exercise scientists, all this type of stuff, and kind of found the most efficient way to work out.
Wow. Okay. We'll have to explore that. But yeah. So, I mean, the basic thing is, this applies to literally everyone, especially in America. I mean, we're going through a health epidemic. There's so much chronic disease. And I'm the same as you. I had the acid reflux. I don't have it anymore unless I start eating crappy again. But, you know, but it's interesting. I think hasn't the life expectancy in the U.S. actually gone down for the first time in like...
Oh, yeah. Well, mainly the U.S. So it's gone up, you know, so as we got better nutrition and we got better medicine, it's gone up in the last 100 years. And then finally, in the last 4 years, about it's gone down. And way worse than other nations too. If you look at these graphs, like US is tanking, and some other countries that are, you know, I guess eating better than us, doing some other things better than us, it's doing fine. So I think there's a lot going on here, but I really think that the foundation is food and what we eat. And that's kind of what we're proving in the Food Lies series, is that food matters most. Because a lot of people will blame it on other things, right? They'll say, oh, it's just genetics. Mm-hmm. Like, well, our rates of death are going crazy right now, right? Our life expectancy is shortening. So why that's, our genetics didn't change in the last 4 years.
Yeah. But so like in 1860, the average lifespan was 39. And then in 2020, it was like 78. So it has increased a lot in that time, but now we're going backwards again. So, but what has changed? Cause I know like, you know, I think, at one point, like people didn't have all this chronic disease, like, and now it says like people say that all these older people, everyone's on all these medications, which I guess, you know, some of these things can keep you alive. But then what kind of life do you have? I mean, it's like you said, was it your mom or dad that had Alzheimer's? And
my mom. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's like, I feel like there's all this, and how many people have diabetes or pre-diabetes and all these other things? Is there a way, I mean, and you're saying that through diet and exercise, we can avoid a lot of these chronic diseases.
Yeah. So back in the day, we would die of different things. We would die of malnutrition things. We'd die of infectious diseases. We'd die of things that we couldn't prevent until recently. And now we're just dying of chronic diseases, which are really accepted. Yeah, at least mainstream accepts that it's something to do with diet and lifestyle. Most of people accept that. And so, yeah, back in the day, it used to be very rare to die of some of these cancers or Alzheimer's. We didn't really have it. Like, we didn't really have the names for some of these things. And so it really all came in with the invention of all the processed foods. And everyone likes to, you know, blame it on one thing or another. But if you look hard enough, you know, some people even say, oh, well, we're using iPads now and everyone's just sedentary. And I say, yes, it's not good to be sedentary. Of course, you want to do some sort of exercise, but that is not causing this massive disease and early death, right? You can kind of rule out all of the other things, and what you're left with is diet.
Yeah. Okay. So like, let's talk about the things that I think most people will agree on. Avoiding, you know, drugs, like street drugs, avoiding smoking, you know, trying to get about 8 hours of sleep, doing some kind of exercise. Those things are pretty well established, but diet is such a debate. I mean, it really is. Cause like my doctor told me, Mediterranean diet. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So this is the nuance here, right? This is why we have to make a 6-part series, is that the Mediterranean diet is fine. You know, and what the doctor is using is kind of epidemiology and these, you know, looking at entire countries and trying to make conclusions. And you have to do a lot more than that. But in the Mediterranean, people are eating whole foods. They're eating a lot more whole foods. They're preparing their foods. You know, traditionally, they would make meals from scratch. They would be grown locally. They'd be seasonal. This would include a lot of fish, a lot of just whatever animals, you know, meat they had around them, homemade fruits, vegetables, whatever. And yeah, maybe some pastas and bread. And maybe it wasn't so bad if you're raising them without covering them in glyphosate. And, you know, in the US, we have a lot more problems with how we're raising our crops. And so the Mediterranean diet is a decent diet in my book. You know, I have no problem with that. It's just, what is the Mediterranean diet? And a lot of people don't know what it actually is. I mean, I talk to food researchers and sociologists, paleoanthropologists, people that go and study this stuff, and they go to the Mediterranean, and the modern Mediterranean diet is not what keeps people healthy, right? It's that they're having their own problems with all these processed foods and different ways of doing things. But the traditional Mediterranean diet is simple meat, eggs, seafood, whole foods, and some like more homemade breads and pastas that weren't really the main dish. It's not like you go to the like Olive Garden and you're getting pounds and pounds of bread and pasta.
Yeah.
Like you're getting pounds and pounds of fresh foods and fish and meat and, you know, vegetables. And then there's like little side dishes.
Right. That's well, I had Vinny Tortorich on. I'm not sure if
I know Vinny. Yeah. I almost made food lies with him, actually.
Oh, okay. Yeah. He's a cool guy. But he was talking about how when all this stuff first came out, because he was a personal trainer, and when he heard like the food pyramid, he's like, all the trainers were like, what the hell? This is totally BS. Because, and he had an interesting point about Italian food, you know, because usually Italian food was like, you know, giant meatballs and stuff. And then the pasta part was kind of like the side of it, like the garnish almost or whatever. Like, and he said the one that was like mostly, is it pasta primavera? I can't remember one of them. He's like, that's the pasta of the whore is what it's called actually. And so that was like the low class pasta was the one that was mostly the carbs, like the meat stuff, the meat heavy pastas were what the rich and the high class people ate in Italy. I'm sure you probably studied that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. It was basically meat and fish for all of history was a sign of prosperity. It was what people strived for. It's why they worked daily, was to afford the meat to put on the table. And this was a centerpiece. I mean, you just look in, even in America in the 1950s, like get a photo of a family dinner and there's a beef roast in the middle of the table. So this was always what humans knew as the best nutrition. And then slowly corporate interests came in. There's a lot of profit in selling these processed foods. And I realized that that's how the world works, and they can shape the entire society using that high profit margin. So I have an example. So I have a company called Nose to Tail. We just do the best regenerative meat, right? Really high quality. Like the ranchers are out there moving the cattle each day. It's just all natural. I make no money on it. It like you can't make, there's no profit margin, right? Maybe even if we did have enough revenue, there's no profit margin on that revenue, right?
Because why is that? Couldn't you just charge more, but then you won't sell any?
Yeah, exactly. There's a certain, it already is expensive and people won't buy it. There's only so much you can pay for a steak. So there's no profit margin on it. I'm telling you, even if you did raise prices, it's still, you'd go from like 10% profit to like 12% profit margin. Mm. And then you look at cereal or pasta, it's like 90% profit margin. It's in a completely different ballgame.
That's so crazy.
I understood how the world works. Yeah. So it's like, if you process a bunch of grains, especially that they're subsidized by the government, and you have a box of cereal, the box might cost more than the cereal, right? You maybe have 3 cents of cereal, you have 4 cents a box, and then you sell it for $6. This is going to give you, and then you times that by a billion. You know, these Kellogg's will sell billions of boxes of cereal per year. Okay, then you can do all of the marketing, right? You blanket children's TV shows with advertisements for cereal. You blanket the news. Everything is just...
And you blanket the government, the food pyramid. That's totally corrupted, right?
Yeah.
Remember, there's a whole story there. Told us, like, you got to eat a lot of bread. It was this Ansel Keys guy who was like, I hear is like a con artist that came up with this study.
Yeah. So Ansel Keys. So we go through that story. You know, Vinny made a film that like covered a lot of this. We're kind of just covering it in brief detail because the story has been told. But yeah, there was this debate in the 50s of what was causing heart disease. And we kind of know what was causing heart disease back then. They were starting to use all these fake oils. They're using margarine. They're smoking. People were smoking indoors. They're smoking with their baby in the car with the windows rolled up. It was wild.
It's a madman, right?
It was wild. But
they're having martinis at lunch and stuff. That's probably not good either, I'm guessing.
Oh, no, no, this is not good. And so they blamed it on fat. And there's a whole story with Ansel Keys kind of fitting data. The same thing, right? He came in with this preconceived idea that it was saturated fat. And so he cherry picked these seven countries out of 22 and made it seem like that saturated fat was a problem, right? But yeah. Then when you look at all the data, you find that there was no distinct trend line that just showed that the more saturated fat they ate, the more they get heart disease. And there's much more to the equation.
Yeah. Anyway. Well, and explain this to me, because it's so funny. Even in my college nutrition class, this was in the 90s, back a long time ago, but they told me that margarine was better than butter and butter was bad. And so I remember, like, you know, my parents had that. Do you remember, like, I can't believe it's not butter, the spray? Yeah. And my parents had that. My parents would follow this stuff too. And I remember using that. And my sister would be joking, like, that they should call it, I can't believe it's not cancer, because it's just all these chemicals. And like, looking back, I'm like, oh my God, what was I thinking? Like, eating that stuff. But that's what, like, they taught us in nutrition.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was saying. There's a lot of money in it. So they can do all the marketing, they can do all the lobbying, and they can do all these fake studies. I'm telling you, like, once you like really wake up to this, you realize that's how the world works. Is if you have this huge profit margin, you have these huge industries based on making billions of dollars per year on selling you this stuff, then you can do a lot. You can do a lot of lobbying and a lot of influence when just to keep this going.
Oh yeah. I just had that GIF go through my head of like the Scarface when they have the money. Have you seen that one? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Yeah.
The money's gone and they're just laughing with the cigars and stuff. Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's real though. That's what happened with, so explain the seed oils. Cause the seed oil, it's everywhere. And so, I mean, it's in restaurants, not only in the salad dressings, but like how they cook the food. What is the deal with that? Why is that in so many places? And why is that bad for you?
Well, yeah, it's the original, it's like the margarine story. So In the early 1900s, they invented this process to take basically a waste product. It was like a kind of a machine lubricant. They used it for other stuff, cottonseed oil. And they would just like, what can we use this for? And they finally invented this 16-step process that with deodorizes and bleaches and uses like hexane solvents to make this waste product into something edible. And then they had this whole marketing campaign to tell people to use it, that it was like, oh, it's cleaner than your mom's lard. You know, don't use the natural fat. So they kind of like leveraged this kind of innovation thing. In the early 1900s, everything was about, you know, the newest, best appliances and advertising to the housewife of like, modernize your kitchen with, you know, Crisco, you know, don't use the, you know, use these great new products. So the margarines and the trans fats, at least we figured out those were bad, right? So these were these hydrogenated oils and that were made from the seed oils. And at least we figured out that those are bad, right? So people stopped using them, and there's, you know, some government stepped in and said, you can't use these anymore, but they still allow the seed oils, right? So this is just anything that comes from a seed, anything that's not a fruit. So the good oils, really the good fats are animal fats. Anything from an animal fat is natural. It's what we've always eaten for all of history. We've always eaten animal fats. And then when you look at the oils, fruit oils are good. Coconut oil, olive oil, avocado oil. These are three fruits that people have been getting oil from naturally, right? You don't need the 16-step process. You just smash them and you get oil.
Yeah.
And it's also a completely different fatty acid composition. So one of the main problems too is the seed oils are just high in polyunsaturated fats, and they can oxidize easily, and they incorporate into your body. So you don't want this different type of fat incorporated into your cells that we're not used to, right? If you get this high amount of these seed oils that's highly unsaturated, these polyunsaturated, it can oxidize easily, and it doesn't. It's just not what our cell wants.
Right. So what are examples of seed oil? Like canola oil, is that a seed oil? Or
yeah, all of that. Canola, Chipotle uses like a wheat bran oil or something.
They do?
There's just anything that's not olive oil.
Soybean oil, is that bad?
Soybean oil is terrible. This is what's mainly used. It's one of the cheapest oils. So they use these in fryers. And what's especially bad is these oils that sit in the fryers all day, and they're even reused and reused, and they're heated, and they go up and down. This is just getting more and more oxidized and just more and more bad for you. And they stay in your body for years. So really, you know, people say, oh, fried food is bad. And then they just blame fat. I'm like, well, no, fried food is bad because it's using the wrong kind of fat. Mm. And you're frying everything in these unnatural oils. And then yes, it is bad. This is one of the main things I absolutely avoid. Like, I do not eat fried food that's fried in oil. If I eat any fried food at all, it would be something that someone made by hand, fried in beef fat.
Wow. Right? Like, or,
yeah.
So you don't eat any fast food, even like just like a cheat meal or anything like that?
No, I don't. I barely eat at restaurants. People think I'm like strict or crazy or extreme, but really just over the past, well, it's been 10 years, 6 years, just full time. But 10 years, I slowly got just disinterested in restaurant food, you know, and it's a process. I'm not saying people listening are going to, you know, all of a sudden change their entire life and never go to a restaurant again. But I go to restaurants like once every 3 months.
Hmm.
Like, I just don't, it just doesn't interest me. I can make better food at home. You know, yeah,
I'm starting to get to that point too. I'm starting to eat more and more at home. And like, I was talking to my girlfriend, we're like, cause we travel, we'll do like a road trip. And then like, you always like want to have lunch, you know, like on a day trip or something. And I go, this weekend, I want to do a day trip, but I want to bring a cooler and I want to bring my own food, because you try to go to a restaurant and you try to eat healthy and it's just it's a gamble. You're probably right. They're probably using soybean oil, all this terrible stuff. And it's like, I'd rather just bring my own food.
Yeah. It's hard to find good food. I mean, we don't have to like go too crazy. You know, if I'm like just traveling, and I really can't eat something, I can find something to order where you can just order, you know, beef patties or something. And hopefully they won't cover them in oil, or you can ask them to not cook them in oil, but you can eat. Yeah. You could get simple foods from a restaurant and yeah, there's ways to do it, but just, yeah.
So what is your diet now? It's like you eat red meat, eggs, mushroom and onions. I saw at one point, and now you've added some veggies, like some sweet potatoes, like low glycemic kind of veggies.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's changed over the years, but it's always just around real food and it's around animal foods as the base. Right. This is the foundation of health. And this is what it's always been for human history, unless we were poor and starving. Right. Like you said, it's like, yeah, everyone has to fill up on bread and pasta now because it's cheap. It's cheap filler. And that's not what we used to do. And so, yeah, I eat any kind of red meat, fish, eggs. I have, just simple vegetables on the side that I cook, or fermented vegetables. And then I have fruit for dessert. I have raw milk. I have cheeses, you know. It's really like delicious and simple. It's just you have to kind of not buy into the mainstream idea of what you should be eating.
Explain the raw milk thing, because doesn't our government say like, don't drink raw milk, you'll die? And then other people say, I hear that raw milk is better than pasteurized. Is that the other kind of milk that the...
Yeah, yeah.
What is the difference? So,
well, pasteurization kills all the good enzymes. It changes the chemical structure of the milk. Actually, you can look at it under a microscope. You could probably Google it and find, you know, raw milk and pasteurized milk and see the difference. And it has the structure still intact. It's a completely different substance. It also has all the enzymes still in it. So you need those enzymes to be able to digest the milk. So a lot of people think that they are lactose intolerant, but they aren't. They're just drinking pasteurized milk, because 99% of milk, any dairy products you buy is pasteurized, more than 99%. You have to really go out of your way to find raw milk. But so I had problems with dairy too. So I thought, oh, well, I just, you know, don't do well with dairy, and it makes me have allergies, or it could make, you know, have different reactions. Then I started drinking raw milk and I get absolutely nothing. It's amazing. It's just, you can digest it perfectly well and you feel great. And it's just a great source of nutrients.
So what is why do they pasteurize it? Is it something to kill bacteria, like the bat? Is there some risk of something bad happening from drinking raw milk?
I mean, there's always a risk, but really, if you look at the risk of foodborne illness, it's mainly from vegetables. There, you know what I mean? Okay, if we're trying to feed 8 billion people, there's always things that go bad. Mm-hmm. And most of it is actually from things like lettuce and leafy greens that have a lot of stuff that catch on the leaves, right? And that they're still present when you buy them at the store, and then you can get sick from it. Then there's other, you know, meat can go bad, right? If you don't handle it properly, or there could be some bacteria. Everything has a risk, but raw milk, it's funny because it actually, there's like some of the least cases of illness from raw milk. And people will say, oh, partly because they have government regulations now and all that. But it's really, I mean, I can't recommend people drink raw milk. It's legal in more than half the states. It's just that this is a good point. What's good, what helps the masses, what helps government bodies, and what helps like big manufacturers usually isn't good for the individual. Mm. Right? So we have to make decision based on huge populations of 100 million people, 300 million people, right, in the US. And so they're just like, well, it's raw milk is healthier. And I'm pretty sure these food scientists at the USDA know this, because it's just common sense and common knowledge that raw milk has the active enzymes that you need to drink it. And this is what we've been eating for all of history. But maybe there was a lawsuit 30 years ago or where someone got sick from the raw milk. So it's better to just regulate it and just say that it has to be pasteurized. And then there's a whole money-making thing too in certifying it and doing this whole thing. Mm. So it's like, yes, it's better to just make these broad sweeping things for the powers that be, or for, you know, things at the top, but that usually is kind of bad for the individual. So this is like kind of a law of nature that I realized over the years is, why is everything so bad? Why is a food pyramid upside down and backwards? Well, it's just better for the powers that be. It's better for the corporate interests. It's all the, and then they're doing all the lobbying, and it's just easier and more profitable to have these systems that hurt the individual, right? So what's for individual health, I usually do the opposite of what the guidelines are. And
that's what I'm hearing from a lot of people that are healthier. I try to look to the people that are healthy and say, okay, what are you doing? Cause you're in good health. You look good. What I want to follow your rules. And the government, I don't think the people that are following those guidelines are usually not healthy.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's just a law of nature though. Like how it works. It's like, what's good for the top is usually bad for the bottom, right? It's like, what's good for the CEO of the company is not really great for the janitor.
Yeah.
It's just like how it works. I'm just telling you that it's not like these guys are that evil. They're just trying to get paid and do their thing. And, you know, they justified
having sell in a boardroom to try to, you know, decrease profit and make people healthier, or increase profit and make people sicker. Like if you're in the business of making money and you're not in the business of ethics, then I guess that's a good sell for the boardroom.
It's exactly what has to happen. They are legally responsible to make profits for the shareholders. Right, these big companies—they cannot just make decisions based on that. That's actually against the law of commerce, right? Of like their entire company would fall apart and they would get fired. So I actually realized this: how processed foods work. It's actually the opposite incentive. So processed foods are, the more they process them and put in things like seed oils, added sugar, refined grains, all these cheap ingredients, the less nutrition they have, and the more people will overeat them. Also with the fake flavorings. So it's actually the exact opposite incentive. So they have no incentive to keep people healthy. They actually get paid more. They sell more boxes of cereal or whatever it is, packages of snacks, if they put less nutrition in them, because this is how the human body works. It seeks nutrition. Like we have sensors in our body that detect things like a protein, a savory flavor, right? So if you put chips and you put like a fake savory flavor on it and you put no nutrition in it, right? You put no protein, there's no minerals and vitamins, then your body will eat them and it will think that it's getting some protein, maybe because that savory flavor for all of history meant we were getting protein and nutrients, but we don't. So your body keeps eating. Right. So your body keeps eating these empty foods, and they have the taglines, once you pop, you can't stop, or bet you can't eat just one. And this is true because they found out the less nutrients they put in, the less protein and the less nutrients they have in a food, the more people will eat it. So it's actually exactly opposed to your health.
Yeah, I saw that. You posted a clip about that with, I think it was Doritos or something. I was like, oh, that is so fascinating. So smart, but so evil at the same time. It's super evil.
Yeah, but they just, they have no duty to make a health food. It's not they're a weight loss clinic.
That's true.
Right? Like weight loss clinic is incentivized to have you lose weight.
Right.
Right. That's the whole thing. The fast food, like the chips, Doritos has zero incentive to do anything other than get you to eat more chips.
Yeah. Well, so talk about sugar, because I can't remember, what is the documentary that was it Food Incorporated, or one of them like really focuses on sugar and how they've how they process that, how cheap it is, how they put it in every freaking food. Like check your food labels, like it's in like peanut butter and like random things and bread and stuff. We're like, why is there sugar in bread and peanut butter? And I think the biggest thing is soda. And I'm guilty of this too, because I love a Coke Zero, vanilla cherry Coke. Oh, it's so good, but it's so terrible for, especially the diet sodas are even worse than the sugary sodas, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, a lot of people have different opinions on that, but I mean, the sugar part, at least it doesn't have pure sugar in it, but you could get in trouble with all these fake chemicals and your body is still tricked kind of into thinking that it's sweet. So there could be some bad effects. People say there's bad effects to the gut microbiome from the fake sweeteners. So there's a lot going on there, but to the sugar topic. Yeah. I mean, it's the excess of all this. Right? Like sugar in itself, like, okay, sweet. Like if you ate fruit back in the day or honey, it's not just poison. It's not like, oh, you just get cancer and you die because you ate some sugar from fruit. Right. But if what they found out is it's way cheaper to add it into everything. And yes, you're right. Everything you go, look at your ketchup, it's filled with corn syrup. It's like, you know, could be like 20 grams of sugar you didn't even know you're getting because it doesn't even taste sweet, really. Ketchup doesn't really taste that sweet. Unless you realize, you think about it, you're like, oh, wait, this does taste a little sweet. And then you look at the bottle and it's like people are getting so much sugar. It's added everywhere and it's displacing good nutrition. So these are kind of the nuances that people don't really think about that often, is that it's not that, oh, like sugar is toxic, because you can jump ahead because like, okay, people who have cancer and they're like, oh, there's the sugar, the cells are running on sugar. And so it's causing cancer and this and that. I'm like, kind of. Does this make sense? Like, yeah, if your metabolism is messed up, you're eating sugar all day, every day, then this is causing metabolic problems and it's definitely causing these chronic diseases. But the main point is that it's not like sugar is just inherently toxic, right? Because a lot of people, I look at both sides of these arguments. People were like, oh, well, there's like fruitarians that eat just pure fruit and they eat a lot of quote sugar, but they're very skinny and they're okay. Well, they're malnourished, but they don't look great and they have other problems, but still it shows that it's the quantities, right? It's the quantities that matter. And so I'm not afraid of eating fruit. I did go more low carb for a long time. You know, I've tried the different diets. I've done keto. I've done low carb. I've done this stuff. But now I'm eating more fruit and eating sweet potatoes, like you said. You know, I'm eating foods in their whole form. And that's completely different than eating just straight sugar.
Yeah. Well, because if you eat an apple, it's sweet and it's got sugar in it, but it's also got fiber. So talk about fiber, because I think that was a little bit of the theory with the food pyramid. And that's what I learned in nutrition class, is that fiber is really good for you. You need, most Americans are not getting enough fiber. Fiber prevents colon cancer. Fiber can help fight heart disease. And so when you're eating a meat heavy diet, how do you get enough fiber, or do you need fiber? Is that a myth?
Oh, fiber is the longest story. It's such a nuanced thing. It's really kind of, so fiber, there's nothing inherently healthy about fiber. This is association. So I'm not saying fiber is bad. Stay with me here. So,
okay.
All that it means is people are eating whole foods. Okay. So this is a lot of nutrition stuff. You kind of get lost in some of the details where you don't actually need fiber. It's just that people who eat more fiber are eating less junk. Does this make sense? Like you're eating,
it's like you were saying before with the sugar, how the sugar is displacing the nutrition that you should be getting.
Yes. So so fiber in a sense is good, but I don't say that the fiber is magical. It's just that it's not like a diet. People are lacking fiber. It's that they are filled up on processed foods. And if you're eating more fiber, that means you're eating real foods. So part of the way to prove this is you look at carnivores, right? There's a lot of carnivore diet people out there. Yeah. Not me. I enjoy meat. I eat a lot of meat. I'm friends with all these carnivore people. Mm-hmm. People have been doing it for 20 years. You know, there's some of these people that have been doing it. Like Sean Baker famously has been doing it for like 9 years, 10 years. There's other people doing it for 20 years. There's actually a rancher lady that I'm going to interview that's been doing it for like 50 years.
Really?
She's in her 70s and looks incredible.
Wow.
Her name is Maggie. Like people don't believe her. I posted about her. My friend, Dr. Anthony Chafee, visited her and saw her driver's license in person and verified her age. I think she might be 80 now. And she looks like she's 40. It's incredible. And so she's not eating fiber. I'm telling, like Inuit, there's huge populations of people that don't eat fiber for most of the year, right? And super healthy. You go in the Arctic. I've interviewed some of these people. They just eat reindeer meat and fish and just whatever, right? They don't have fiber. Throughout history, we were in an ice age for tens of thousands of years. We were not eating plants for that time. We were up hunting woolly mammoth and giant bison and stuff.
Yeah.
So it's not necessary. It's good, but it's not, I'm saying it's bad. It could be bad for some people. Actually, some people get in trouble with fiber where they get, it's like IBS and Crohn's and these different inflammatory diseases because they have an autoimmune reaction, and it partly could be too much fiber, too much roughage, and it's irritating their gut, and they get rid of it and all of their symptoms clear. They even did a study where there was a study on constipation, and that there was different groups and they gave them different amounts of fiber, and one group got zero fiber and the group with the zero fiber 100% cured the constipation.
Wow. Well, so, and talk about that, like eating, is there different diets for your genetics or whatever? Because I know like Jordan Peterson and his daughter, Michaela Peterson, she does this thing called the lion diet, which is even like the next level carnivore diet. Like it's only land animals. It's super strict, but she got rid of all her autoimmune issues and stuff. So there was a guy at my gym and he was talking about how, he's got, I think the rheumatoid arthritis or some sort of, and he's a young guy. And I was like, have you tried like the carnivore diet? And he goes, that only works for people of Nordic descent. Cause they're the Peterson people they're from Nordic descent. He's like, most people, that diet doesn't work. Do you understand that?
I know. I mean, I understand where he's coming from, and it is a theory, and I'm not going to say it's completely wrong, but I don't think it's correct. I think that we're all humans. We're all Homo sapiens. Okay? And you know, we all came from meat eaters, and there was times in history, most of history, where we had to rely on just animal foods for maybe most 9 months of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are all kind of different. And yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on and people have a lot more problems these days. And because our toxic environment has, you know, all these things attacking us. So yes, things can work differently for different people and there's different predispositions and stuff like that. But I think that any human can eat just animal foods for a period of time and reverse a lot of problems and be fine. But I'm not saying I don't recommend carnivore diets to people. I think it's a modality, right? It's a intervention that you can use. So maybe someone could say, well, it's not good long term, or this didn't work for me because I didn't feel right for the first, you know. But it's like, well, you need to be adapted to it. Like going keto, it doesn't feel right. You know, after you stop eating all these carbs, your body craves them, and you have a transition to fat burning, and you feel low energy, and it's hard to work out. And then you get past it, and then it can work. You know, there's all these things that go on with these different diets, and I don't think people should do them long term either, because people are like, I did it for a year, and then I started having these problems. I'm like, yeah, we don't need to do carnivore forever.
But isn't part of the theory too with carnivore is that if you just eat meat, so now you're not eating the processed stuff, which is terrible for you, but also it may be too that even the fruits and vegetables can be bad for people, not necessarily because fruits and vegetables are bad, but because of all the stuff, these chemicals that were spraying, what do you call it, the glyphosate?
Glyphosate,
these terrible things that are being sprayed on our chemicals or our soil. Like, I don't know all the science behind that, but I just know that, you know, whatever, we don't know. I mean, I don't know all that. You probably know more than I do about what is being sprayed in our food, our fruits and vegetables, and definitely like anything sort of bread or whatever. I know like in Europe, people who are gluten intolerant go to Europe and they eat the bread and they're fine. So there's some things, the chemicals that are being put in our food that are really bad for people. So if they just eat a meat diet and they're just getting literal meat, the meat acts as like is filtering a lot of this stuff that we're eating and kind of acts as the middleman.
Yeah. Yeah. So all that I kind of agree with that. So I'm not saying that people need to avoid all the fruits and vegetables, but they could probably have great benefits because they're not getting all of those different chemicals and things. And there's a lot of anti-nutrients. I don't eat kale or spinach anymore. There's a lot of oxalates in that. And I had problems. I drank kale and spinach shakes every day for years back in the day. And that's just not natural. That's not how humans ate. And so I have problems with oxalates. So there's also these leaves are covered in the pesticides and stuff. So if you get rid of those, then you probably will see a lot of improvements. But again, you can also just add back in some organic fruits and certain vegetables, like fermented vegetables, and you won't have these problems. And you can like eat a more normal diet that's sustainable for you, right? Like, I don't think people need to go so extreme mm-hmm. with the carnivore.
So what are your thoughts? Explain red meat, because that's one that's gone, it's been demonized. And even my dad, he got cancer. And after he got the cancer, his doctor told him to avoid red meat so that, you know, the cancer wouldn't flare back up or whatever. And explain also the difference between grass-fed and corn-fed. Because does that make a huge difference? Like, is corn-fed beef is that bad for you? I mean, I know grass-fed is better, but is corn-fed awful, or is it that big of a difference?
It depends on who you ask. So I have a whole grass-fed and finished regenerative meat company. So people will think I would say that you can only eat the grass-fed and finished meat, but I actually don't say that because I just don't believe in that extreme. I feel like there's so many people that can't afford that, and they're gonna do a lot better if they eat normal grocery store meat than any other food out there. And I've seen it. I know tons of doctors and people personally that have completely changed their health, reversed chronic conditions, and lost even hundreds of pounds eating grocery store meat, regular grass, just whatever feedlot, right? Corn fed, or it's a bunch of, it's not just corn, right? It's just all kinds of things. Completely changed their entire life just by eating meat from the grocery store. So there's no problem with it. There might be, there is definitely benefits to eating the grass fed and finished stuff, right? There is a whole host of secondary compounds that are in them. It's a better fat profile, right? It has more omega-3s compared to omega-6s, which is, there's a lot going on, but it's just not required, right? So meat, yeah. Thinking that meat causes cancer is the biggest lie, right? My series is called Food Lies, and my Instagram is Food Lies. The biggest lie is that meat is bad for us. It makes no sense. I think it's a big propaganda tool that keeps the status quo, that keeps the food industries in business, right? That keeps this whole system the way it is they have to have an enemy, right? So the enemy has been animal fat, saturated fat, and red meat, since Ansel Keys, really. That's around the 1950s when that all started. Before that, for all of history, and even around the world, people who don't buy into the guidelines still know this, that meat and animal fat were the healthiest foods we can eat, the most nutrient-dense and bioavailable nutrition we can get, and the most prized foods that we've always eaten. And then they needed to blame an enemy, so it was a good one, because if meat and fat are bad, then you have to eat, then all the other, you know, low fat products are good, right? Mm-hmm. Then they can just sell cheap corn, wheat, and soy, bread, pasta, the whole food pyramid. It's just all a big racket, really. And people have to realize that, like, it's actually incomprehensible that eating meat would be bad for us, right? Any food, any species on earth, any animal eats a diet that from their environment, right? It's just a koala bear eats the leaves, you know, the lion eats the zebra eats the grass. Like, this is just how animals live. And this is why they're healthy. It's that the diet that they evolved on is what they're made for. And so it makes no sense that red meat would be the problem. You have to realize what came into the diet, what changed, right? Like, what changed with the disease came in. And it was, of course, all the processed foods and unnatural oils and added sugars and just, yeah, refined foods.
Well, then what about the eggs? Because they've gone back and forth with this. I mean, they've said, don't eat eggs. No, eggs are good. No, just the egg whites. Don't eat the yolks. Now they're saying the yolks have choline. And I mean, even the people at my gym are recommending, they tell me to eat only egg whites. And they're like, well, you can throw like one egg in like with like six egg whites. So talk about the eggs and egg whites versus full eggs and pasture raised versus cage free and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Well, eggs are a good example of why, you know, everything's bogus as well. All these people trying to say that eggs are bad. It's the perfect food. It's actually one of the most perfect foods that humans can eat. It's a whole chicken, right? It has all of the vitamins and minerals and protein that can create an entire living chicken. And we can eat that and get all of that nutrition. So the yolk is where all the good nutrients are. And it's also where the cholesterol is. So that's the kind of propaganda, because we thought that you would just eat cholesterol and then you'd get high cholesterol and then you just get heart disease. That was the narrative. And really, there's studies that keep coming out every year that show that's not true. I just posted about one recently. There was a big study that just showed people who ate this amount of eggs had no risk for heart disease, no increased cholesterol. There's nothing wrong with it. So it's kind of this old myth that won't die. And in the bodybuilding community and the workout world, I kind of get where they're coming from. I mean, it's wrong, but I get that the thought process is, but to build muscle and lose fat, right? To get ripped, you want to eat a lot of protein and you want to cut down on carbs and fat, or, you know, either both of them, really. Some people go low carb, some people go low fat. Some people go both. If you're a bodybuilder and you're trying to get good on stage for competition, you're going to go very, very high protein, probably very low fat, and like lowish carb too, right? You still need some energy, right? To like get through the day and do your workouts. But this is like a bodybuilding, getting ripped diet is tons and tons of protein and lower on the fats and carbs. So that's just a short-term hack to lose fat and maintain your muscle. Right. But that doesn't mean that it's the most nutritious and it's most long-term health promoting thing you can do. Right. So I get it, because the yolk has more fat in it and the egg white is just pure protein mainly. Mm-hmm. So if you're trying to lean out temporarily, you could probably get more lean by eating tons of egg whites and maybe only one yolk and, you know, eating lots of eggs and meat or, you know, meat and fish and other things and cutting down on fat and cutting down some carbs too. That doesn't mean it's long-term health. Like, really long-term health is about full, complete protein, complete vitamins and mineral profile. And that would be where you'd eat the whole egg.
Okay. That's good to know. Yeah. So that makes sense. Cause I think my gym, even they tell me that they're like, we just want to make you look good. So even
it's short term.
They do exercises that you know, try to grow the muscles that make you look buff and all that stuff. So yeah, that makes sense.
That's what people want. Yeah. It's a short-term result. It's hard to think long-term.
Right.
Because it's not like I'm like counting, like I just have these immediate benefits of eating the egg yolks. Mm-hmm. But there are benefits that are in the couple of years, I don't get sick anymore. I don't, you know, like all these things that you can tell that your immune system's working well. Like, you know, there's way more things that happen from eating the full nutrient profile that you're not going to see just by trying to get shredded in 6 months.
Right. What about, talk about organic foods versus GMO, non-organic. And then now I think there's a new thing, bioengineered, which scares the hell out of me. And I know that they, I think it was in like, I don't know what year it was. It was during Obama's administration, which kind of shocked me. They approved this DARK Act thing. So they don't have to tell us what is GMO and what is not. So you just assume if it doesn't say non-GMO, or then you assume that it is GMO, right?
Yeah. Yeah, this is just another one of those things that the food industry just keep doing to make more money. And the government kind of supports too, because like I said, what's good for the top isn't necessarily good for the bottom. And it's like they kind of make decisions on a world level or on a nationwide level. They're like, well, people need to get fed, right? So they're like, well, there's this new technology that will genetically modify things and make the wheat grow bigger and faster. And they're like, okay, this sounds great. We can help feed more people. But they don't realize the repercussions of that, you know? And it's like, so yes, we do have GMO wheat, and it is way bigger and taller and grows faster. And that's the theory of why when you go to Europe, you don't, people who normally can't eat bread can eat bread in Europe or pasta, because they don't have this GMO gigantic hybridized wheat also covered in glyphosate, right? They have the more ancient varieties, right? It's like the heirloom variety, or, you know, and it's not as profitable, right? It's just it's a little bit less profitable, and that it doesn't have as big a yield, but they do it traditionally and it works. And that, you know, they grind it fresh and into flour and they make it, and it, you know, theoretically that's why they can eat it and they're not as sick as us. So yeah, I don't think that you can ever cheat nature. So GMO, all this stuff, pesticides, all of these things that we're doing, they have higher yields and they make more money, but you cannot cheat nature in that it's going to have a repercussion, right? It's not going to be as good for you. It's going to have these slow problems to human health. Like really, if you want to think about anything that almost can't be debunked, is you have to align with nature. You can't cheat it, right? You have to just go. If someone says, okay, is this food good? And then you say, okay, well, when did we invent this food? And if it's something old that your grandparents ate, or even better, that our ancestors ate, it's probably good. And if it's some new genetically modified version, it's probably not as good. And it's just simple.
Yeah. Well, then what about alcohol? Because alcohol has been around a while. I think even the Egyptians drank beer, and they used to say, oh, a glass of red wine is good for you. It's good for your heart. Now they're saying, I think the newest thing is no alcohol, mm-hmm. or minimal alcohol. I mean, I don't know. That's another one. It's almost as bad as the egg thing, where they just keep going
back
and forth, whether it's good or bad.
It's back and forth. Okay. There's nothing good about alcohol other than if you have fun. The only good thing is if you have...
I do like having fun.
Okay, so this is the thing. The truth is alcohol is bad. It's basically a poison to your body. And... It's not good to drink it every day at all. Even if it's just two glasses of wine per day, I that is not good. And, you know, there's scientists like Dr. Huberman's just completely talking about this, but like, no alcohol is better than having alcohol, even if it's in moderation. But we have been drinking alcohol for so much of history. We've been brewing things, fermenting things. I went to Tanzania, they were brewing banana beer, and they'd ferment bananas, and they would put in actually this, what is it? The bark of a tree that prevents parasites. I forget what it's called. But so they naturally knew this, that they wormwood, they would put wormwood into the banana beer, and it would help cleanse them. They would only drink it once a week. They would have fun. It was a social occasion, and it can be fun, right? So there's negative sides to everything, right? There, like anything could be bad for you. So with the alcohol thing, it's better to have none, but if you're going to, like, ancestrally, I think if you look at human history, there always was this desire to be social, have fun, laugh. And this happens not often, right? This was like a special occasion, and people, and yeah, you can bounce back from anything. So I guess I'm trying to give the nuanced view of this and not like completely scare people away from it. It's better to not drink, mm-hmm. but if you're going to like have a little bit on occasion, I think it could provide you some benefit of, say, having a great time on a special occasion. But also, some people just be like, hey, I don't need the alcohol to have a good time, and good for them.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, what about, here's another one that I hear goes back and forth a lot, good, bad for you, coffee. Is coffee okay? And also, like, I think, talk about the different kinds of, because isn't, like, there's, like, chemicals sprayed on coffee. I heard there's, like, mold on coffee now.
Oh, man.
It's like,
yeah, there's so much going on there. Coffee, yeah, there's like the mycotoxin thing. Like, it's better to have like a clean, tested coffee could get kind of expensive. I'm doing experiments stopping coffee, except I have a little bit. I just were trying to finish my bag, actually. So I don't think it's the end of the world, but I think there's kind of harms in being reliant on anything or having too much of anything every day, right? If you're just like, okay, well, I have 3 or 4 cups of coffee every day and that's year round, that's going to add up.
A lot.
Right. And then also the caffeine, you could be going up and down. You could be like hurting your sleep. You could be relying on something to get by. You could be increasing your cortisol in the mornings too much. So again, a lot of nuance there. I started drinking like matcha tea and less of it, right? So it has way less caffeine. So I'd make this thing with raw milk and matcha and a little bit of maple syrup. It tastes delicious. It's kind of like melted ice cream. If you go to a sushi restaurant and get the green tea ice cream, it tastes like that. I'm like, well, this is great. And so again, there's always nuances. There's always risks with everything. And I'm always kind of in the middle on these views of like telling people that you don't want to become a monk and sit there and never do anything. You know, and you get people get so scared of all foods, and then they're like, I can never go to a restaurant again. I can never have a sip of alcohol again. I can never have any coffee. And it kind of can turn into a downward spiral. It can become more stressful than just drinking the coffee.
Mm-hmm.
So again, yeah, buy organic coffee. Absolutely. Especially because it's concentrated. So if you're eating something that's concentrated, like if you take a whole bunch of beans and you grind them up and they're covered in pesticides and you grind them up and then put hot water in them and get a concentrated brew, you don't want chemicals on that. You don't want pesticide residue all over that. So yes, definitely get some organic coffee, but then and try to drink less of it and try to not be reliant on it.
Okay. Yeah, we're at about an hour. Is it okay if we go a little over that? Because I still got a few more questions.
Yeah, let's do a couple more. This is okay. Good. It's like rapid fire, just getting all the...
Yeah, I just want to... Yeah, because this is like mostly for my own benefit. So hopefully other people understand too. But the other thing I want to ask you about, protein powders. Because I think... I can't remember if it was you or someone else had posted about that. You know, that used to be the big thing, especially at my gym. They're like, oh, you got to have 2 protein shakes a day. But now I'm hearing protein powders are not natural. And there's like a lot of like, what was it, lead or all these chemicals in the protein powders because of the machines. And what are your thoughts on protein powders and protein shakes?
Yeah, good one. Also, one of these nuanced things that maybe people aren't going to like my answer, but protein powder, again, I totally understand the gym people because getting more protein in your diet is going to help you. It's going to help you burn muscle. I build muscle. It could help you burn fat, but it will help with your satiety, right? So this is a concept I really like that I haven't brought up yet, is that everyone wants to eat less, yet it seems like they can't, right? The people are overweight because they ate too much. And it's not, they didn't eat too much protein. I'll tell you that. It's what they ate is too much refined carbs or refined fats, right? It's from the processed food. This is your fats and carbs. So drinking protein shakes could be helpful to get more protein in your diet, be more full, and eat less carbs or fats. I group carbs and fats as energy, right? I split things up into nutrients versus energy. So your nutrients are protein, vitamins, and minerals. And your energy is fat and carbs, right? So you kind of think of those in 2 different buckets. And how to gain muscle and lose fat is you eat more nutrients and less energy, right? This is, every bodybuilder knows this, and this is exactly what they're telling you at your gym. But the nuance behind it is you want more nutrients, not just the protein, right? That's why we're talking about eating the whole egg. Mm-hmm. And we want less energy. And how do you do that? Is you need to eat foods in their whole form, because this is where the satiety aspect comes in. So if you're eating a whole apple, you're getting, I don't know, like 10 grams of sugar, we'll call it, whatever size of apple that is. Okay, so you're eating the fiber, and the fiber is fine. There's nothing magical about it. It's just filling up your stomach, and it's you're just getting it in the whole food matrix. It doesn't hit your bloodstream as fast. If you drink apple juice, it goes straight into your bloodstream, right? Causes an insulin spike, big glucose spike, and you're not very full from that. No one's like, oh man, I drank some apple juice 8 hours ago. I'm stuffed. You know what I mean? It's like, but if you ate like a bunch of meat and a bunch of apples, you will be stuffed
mm-hmm.
for for 5 hours, right? Whatever, between meals. Like, I don't snack. I'm eating a bunch of meat, and I do eat apples for dessert, right? Like, I can eat one apple's enough, you know? You can eat two apples. You are full. So it's, you're getting only, say, we call it 10 grams of sugar in that apple, but I'm getting the fiber with it, mm-hmm. right? And I'm full, and it's in its whole form. And I'm full, and I'm not going to overeat. If you drink, you can drink a couple apple juice. That could be like six apples. You get 60 grams of sugar per se, right? Like, right. Whatever size of cup that is.
It's as much sugar as soda, right? Or
it's like a full soda. Yeah. So you can drink a full soda's worth of apple juice in 2 seconds, and you're not getting full from that.
Yeah.
Right. So the opposite, if you're trying to build muscle, right? You want to get on a bodybuilding, not everyone wants to get on a bodybuilding stage, but you know, this is the message at your gym, is you don't want to be drinking apple juice. That's the worst thing you could do. You're just getting a whole bunch. Same thing, they're telling you to eat less fat. If you're just dumping butter on everything, that's not going to be great either. Mm-hmm. So these are like refined sources of energy. Really, you just want to eat foods in their whole form, get enough protein and nutrients, and try to cut down on the energy side of your equation, whether that's fats or carbs. And that's just like, when you zoom out, in the beginning, I talked about changing my views and not being biased or dogmatic about diets. And so it's like, the farther you zoom out, the more you realize there could be a lot of diets that are good. Like the Mediterranean diet could be good, or the, I call it the Sapien or Sapien diet, which is what I do, or generally like a paleo diet. These are all good diets. And what they're doing is giving you enough nutrients, enough protein, vitamins, minerals for less energy, right? Without all the excess refined carbs and fats. So yeah. That's like the truth, right? That you can just zoom out and that's why the Sapien, it's not like there is one diet. It's just a framework that involves animal foods and real foods on the side.
Yeah. And what are your thoughts on another kind of trendy thing that people talk about a lot is the intermittent fasting, that either like they'll fast for, they'll only eat during an 8-hour window and they fast every day for 16 hours, or they'll do like a day of fasting, one day a week or one day a month or several days a month. And then, you know, there's different kinds of fasting, I guess, because there's just water only, there's bone broth fast, there's a juice fast. What are your thoughts on fasting?
Yeah, another great tool. So this is, again, where people get lost in this because it's complicated, right? And not that I know everything about nutrition, but I've been studying it long enough to like kind of see through all the different things. And it's like, fasting is an amazing tool, and I used it for years. And if you are overweight, it is a great tool, okay? But that doesn't mean you have to do it forever, and that doesn't mean you have to get obsessed with it. And you can do different versions of it, and it doesn't matter. You just have to find out which one works for you. But I still don't really eat for 16 hours a day. I still am kind of just only eating in an 8-hour window just because I'm not hungry. Like, I haven't eaten yet today. Like, I eat at noon, 1 p.m. That's when I get hungry. And then I'll eat dinner, and I eat big meals, and then I don't eat, right? I don't snack. I'm only eating for 8 hours a day, and it's amazing. And that helped me lose a lot of body fat, get more muscle, you know, heal my metabolism. Everything about my life got better by eating the correct foods and then eating less often. But that doesn't mean that that's the only way to do it. Right now, in the past couple of years, after I fixed my metabolism and I got to my ideal body composition, right? I got to my goal. Then, so people out there, you can get to your goal weight and then you don't have to do the insane, strict things anymore because you're in a good place. And then I can be adding more fruit and sweet potatoes into my diet, is what I did. I could be eating breakfast now if I want to. And it's not going to affect me negatively. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I can still use these tactics and techniques, right? If I go off track or something, I go on a trip, then yeah, maybe you can use these techniques like fasting and it'll help you. And there's also the autophagy, right? So people talk about these benefits of doing the fasting to clear out your cells. And this is like good. And yeah, absolutely. But then some people go too far and then they're obsessed with it.
Yeah, no, definitely. And so then what about, so yeah, well, you said you only eat out like every 3 months or something. So do you still do like a cheat meal or something? Or is it like you make something at home, like you cook it yourself as kind of your cheat meal? Or like, I mean, it seems amazing that I would love to get to that point where I'm only eating in a restaurant once every three months, but like, it seems like I would still occasionally want like a cinnamon roll or a slice of pizza or something, like occasionally.
You're right. So I do help some people around Austin, some friends. I don't really do like health coaching publicly, but this is the number one thing that people need to learn and learn how to do. Cause I had the same thing. Yes. So I was doing cheat meals for many years, right? I had this whole journey. Like I said, it was like a 10-year process to get to this. And I think it's perfectly okay there's human nature to want to indulge once in a while. And so I was doing that years ago and I would eat clean. And then on Sundays I'd do a cheat meal. It's what The Rock does. I don't know that much about him, but I just know he eats insane cheat meals, right? And goes like wild on Sundays. And then he's like really strict otherwise.
Okay.
And you know, I mean,
isn't that what Tom Brady, even he talks about the 80-20 rule, that 80% of what he eats is really healthy and 20%, which like, that seems like extreme. That seems like, or lenient to me. I would think that he would be like 85% or something.
Yeah, I'm more like 85, 10. I mean, not so. Okay. Oh, yeah. There's different ways to do it, too. It's not like I'm 100% perfect. So even if I'm not going to restaurants, I go to a lot of food events and there's like at people's houses, right? And these are like where people prepare foods. And I'm more like a cheat meal for me would be going to a potluck or some kind of barbecue and then having just foods that people made and not freaking out about it. Mm. So yeah, I'm not perfect. And I think, yeah, the Tom Brady thing, that is a good rule, is that you can do very well just doing like kind of an 80-20 rule of like eating clean as much as you can and then dipping into some other foods when necessary. But what I was going to say about the health or just helping people with their diet is there is this human nature to want to indulge, and I still have that. But instead of going out to eat, and like a lot of people, they have problems with DoorDash or Uber Eats or whatever, and they're just like, I just want to order everything under the sun and just go nuts. Instead, I teach people, and I do this myself, is find kind of cheat meals, quote, cheat meals that you make for yourself that are very indulgent, but that aren't bad for you. So I can have a stack. I have like this thing of grass-fed burger patties from Costco. You can get a stack of these frozen burger patties. This is like my backup plan, like thing in my freezer. If I want an indulgent meal, and I do once a week, I could cook up like a stack of patties, you know, a couple patties with cheese, grill up onions. You can have some bacon. You have like jalapenos and like pickles on the side. Like it's this huge pile of food. It's like very indulgent, right? So delicious. I mean, I just don't have the bun or I don't have the French fries. You know what I mean? I just cook like a really indulgent meal that's just real foods and it tastes delicious. Does that make sense? Like just fine.
So that's your cheat meal, is kind of like a what in an out burger, they call it like the Flying Dutchman. You could just get the
flying. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the that, or even go to In-N-Out and get a Flying Dutchman.
Yeah.
There's nothing that wrong. I mean, In-N-Out uses pretty fresh and good ingredients. You could just get a stack. Yeah. You could get like,
you can tell because when you get the Flying Dutchman, it's just meat and cheese. They don't hide it with the bun and the ketchup, and you can take, and it's like, wow, this is really good. I actually like it better.
It's great. Or you could get it the other way with like protein style with like the lettuce, you know, wrapped and you eat. I mean, yeah, absolutely. There's ways to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Okay. All good stuff. I guess, yeah. One more thing. I guess I'll make this the last question. What are your thoughts? This is kind of a weird little, I mean, it's been labeled a conspiracy, but I don't think it is the bugs in our food. Have you heard of this thing? They're starting to try to put bugs in our food and they're grounding up crickets and stuff and then calling it like they have some scientific name. So you have to like read the label. And this is a real thing though, right?
I've read about it. And I saw a post just yesterday that there was some sort of political thing. It's like Democrats, you know, hiding a bill that says that they could put in bugs in our food, you know, some sort of political thing. No, this is real. There's like kind of an agenda that is getting people used to different sources of protein. So whether that be lab-grown meat or just plant-based meat burgers or insect protein, and it's kind of under the guise of environmental sustainability. And I am all for, you know, having a clean environment, but I think it's been co-opted to push agendas and change the way people eat. And I think there's a lot of money involved and a lot of power. involved, right? They even do this with the CO2. There's like, oh, there's like carbon credits and there's this and that. Mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, we shouldn't just be like burning. I don't want to live next to a coal plant, right? I don't want like burning right. coal in my air. But I also don't believe that the cows burping are causing climate change. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, well, this I had an expert on my show all about this, and I watched your movie on your channel, The Climate, the movie, mm-hmm. where you interview, did you produce
it? It wasn't mine. I just reposted it because I got permission.
Okay.
Yeah, film, YouTube took it down off the original filmmaker's page. They censored it. And so, you know.
Really?
So they were allowing other people to post it because they knew that was going to happen. And so mine has the most views right now. You can't even search it. So they also shadow banned. So they haven't removed it from my account yet, but you cannot search it. Every comment I get, I check my YouTube a lot and they're just like, couldn't find this. It was blocked. So
that's
you have to
crazy. I mean, I watched it. It's so professionally done. And the people you interviewed are like Harvard and Stan. I mean, there was all these like really well-known.
Oh, I didn't interview.
The people that were interviewed.
Yeah.
I mean, the one guy was Obama's science advisor.
Oh, yeah. They have the ex guy that started Greenpeace.
Yeah. Too. The co-founder of Greenpeace. Yeah. Yep.
It's a great thing.
Yeah.
You got to go to my Food Lies YouTube channel and you got to find it. It's hard to find. But this, yes, I'm all about the narratives are so extreme. They want to keep pushing these narratives and it's really money, power, control, all this stuff. And it makes sense as they push this agenda. And it's always has this kind of outcome of, well, it's for the greater good, but you have to eat bugs. Or, like big corporations can use these climate credits. And then they're just buying and selling climate credits and cheating the system. And it always seems to benefit these different people on the top.
Yeah, you can go down the rabbit hole and you could, World Economic Forum and Klaus Schwab and all these nutcases that... they'll say these things out straight up, you're going to eat bugs. You're going to not drive a car. You're going to be happy for this and
own nothing.
And they flat out say it. So, yeah.
Oh yeah. I'm into all this stuff. I try not to talk about it too much cause I don't want to be censored, but it's completely true. And it goes along with my thing of like, what's good for them is bad for us. Right. Exactly. The own nothing and be happy. I've been posting about that for years. They took down that video, but you think it's all good. They make it sound good. They're like, you won't even have to own a car. It'll just come pick you up in the future and this and that. And then you're like, oh, this is okay.
They're going to own stuff. They're
going to own a private
jet. They're going to eat. And but it's different rules for you. Yeah. It's kind of scary stuff. So yeah, I love what you're doing. Your page is great. People should follow you on Instagram. It's Food Lies, and the docuseries will hopefully be coming out soon. And right now, they can still watch your Game Changers Debunked film on YouTube, The Climate, which is, I guess, it's not yours, but you have it posted on your channel. Mm-hmm. And then nosetotail.org is all your products, you sell the steaks and like the beef tallow and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, we do beef tallow body care. Yeah. So we have meat, we have a lot of good pasteurized pork. And just good products that you want to put real fat on your skin. You don't want to put chemical stuff. Your body soaks up whatever you put on it. So that's why we made this beef tallow body care stuff.
Amazing. Great stuff. I love the work you're doing. And thank you so much for coming on the show. It's very educational.
All right. Good times. Thanks, man.
All right. Thanks, Brian. I'll see you later.